Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for joining me. As current rector of the venerable English College here in Rome, Monsignor Nicholas Hudson is hosting celebrations this weekend to mark 6.5 centuries since the founding of the English and Welsh Hospice in Rome. In an effort to find out more about this event, I went round to call on him earlier in the week. He graciously showed me into a high-ceilinged room right opposite the Martyrs' Chapel there. I began by asking him a question connected to the anniversary date. On the 27th of January, you're celebrating a significant milestone in the history of English and Welsh Catholicism. 6.5 centuries since the foundation deed which established an English and Welsh hospice on this site. Am I right in saying its foundation in 1362 made it the first ever English institution abroad?
There's no doubt that there is no English institution outside of England that goes back further than this one. And what is striking is that we've been on this site since 1362 and a little bit before, because it was about 4 years prior to the foundation deed in 1362 that John and Alice Shepherd bought a house on this site and were persuaded 4 years later by the Confraternity of St. Thomas of Canterbury, which had been set up to welcome pilgrims to Rome from England and Wales. They were persuaded to sell their house to the Confraternity to become the hospice. So, yes, we've been here for 650 years plus.
By the word hospice, what does one intend? A house to welcome the weary and sometimes sick pilgrims who came to Rome on foot?
Yes, the word hospice is a little bit confusing for us in England and Wales and in Britain, because we think of it as a place where there is given palliative care. So I invariably say to pilgrims who come here and whom I'm showing around the college that these days we would call it a hostel. But your question is a good one, because there is a stress in the statutes for the foundation of the hospice that particular care, as it says, should be given to welcome the infirm and the needy as well as the poor. So clearly part of the ethos of the place from the outset was that the infirm and the weak and the sickly would be as welcome as anybody else here.
When you say anybody else, it was a popular place. Now, Henry VIII apparently referred to it as our hospice. You had some famous guests here, didn't you?
Yes, there have been some famous guests. It seems that from the outset, the hospice was much in demand and was quite a success. From the little house that began roughly where you have the main entrance to the church on Via Monserrato now, very soon the income accruing from the number of pilgrims coming to stay was such that the Confraternity were able to buy up houses to left and right, going along Via Monserrato, stretching right up to the Swedish hospice, which had been established by St. Bridget of Sweden next door, and soon became really quite a large institution. So yes, a lot of pilgrims began to come quickly. And there were some famous ones who've passed through its doors over the centuries, not least a man who became a notorious priest hunter, Thomas Cromwell, but future saints too. St. Henry Walpole, when he was thinking about the priesthood, came to stay here. And then when the hospice was well established, the poet John Milton came too.
Two centuries later, another date linked to this house and two events in England marked the second milestone for you here at the college. It was 1579, and the hospice became what it is today, a seminary for English and Welsh Catholic young men.
That's right. Just as 1350 was a crucial date for understanding why the hospice began, so 1570 was a crucial date for understanding why the hospice became a seminary. I put it that way because 1350 was a holy year when a great number of pilgrims came from England and Wales and other parts of Europe to Rome at the Pope's invitation and encouragement, and many of them found that they weren't properly catered for. They couldn't find places to stay in Rome, so it was that the Confraternity decided to set up a hospice. Come 1570, when Queen Elizabeth I of England was excommunicated, very quickly it became prohibited in England and Wales to train men for the Catholic priesthood. So the continuing Catholic community had to look abroad to train future priests. And they first began to train men just over the water from Dover in Douai, or Douai, as we call it, which was in Flanders then and is now in France. And it is remarkable and edifying that so many young men offered themselves for the priesthood in spite of the fact that they knew that they risked being arrested, imprisoned, possibly tortured, and even executed. They still came forward in such numbers that Douai became full. And so the man who was responsible for the training of future priests, Cardinal William Allen, had the inspired idea, a very significant idea for this house, of in fact transforming the hospice into a second English college. And so it was that in 1579, the first students came from Douai for this to become a seminary in its own right.
One of the reasons the college is referred to as venerable is partly because the relics of martyrs are venerated here in the Martyrs' Chapel. Do you think the legacy of witness, which is a spiritual one, lingers on here after all these centuries?
I do think that the martyrs are very present to us, as I like to think we're present to them. On the first day that students come to the college, I take them into the college church and show them the martyrs' picture, which is the altarpiece painted by Durante Alberti, which was put in place in the old hospice church to adorn the new seminary chapel, and very quickly became known as the martyr's picture. And the reason for that is that in the first century of the college's existence, between 1581 and 1678, 44 of the students from this house were martyred by being hanged, drawn, quartered. And whenever they heard that one of their brothers had been executed in that way, then all the students with their superiors would come into the college church and sing a Te Deum Laudamus in front of that painting. And for that reason, it soon became known as the martyr's picture. So yes, the memory of the martyrs is very much alive. And I always say to the students on the first day that they're here that I'm sure that the martyrs pray for each of them every day of their time here in seminary, and that we must pray to the martyrs to intercede for us.
Celebrations are taking place on Friday, and you have a number of rectors from the past coming here for the occasion, right from 1971. Am I correct in saying that?
Yes, I'm delighted to say that all the rectors from Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor onwards, who was rector from 1971 to 1977, when he became Bishop of Arundel and Brighton, before his transition to Westminster as Archbishop of Westminster and Cardinal Archbishop, are going to be present. And they number five: Monsignor Hay of Plymouth, Monsignor Kennedy of Liverpool, Monsignor Toffolo of Plymouth, and Monsignor Kilgariff of Birmingham. They will all be present.
You're having other guests as well, don't you? You have friends of the Venerable English College, don't you?
Yes, there are two support associations who will be present: the Friends of the Venerabile and also the Alumni Association, which we call the Old Romans Association. And in amongst the Old Romans Association are a great number of former staff members. And we also have a good number of bishops attending too. On Sunday the 29th of January, Archbishop Nichols of Westminster will preside at Mass, and there will also be present in choir with Cardinal Murphy O'Connor, Cardinal Leveda, and Cardinal Torrent, and concelebrating alongside Archbishop Nichols will be a number of bishops from England and Wales. And we will also be having an old boy of the college who is now an Apostolic Nuncio de Guatemala, Archbishop Paul Gallagher. And we'd like as well that Archbishop de Noia is gracing us with his company as well.
What do you believe will be the highlights of the celebration, or celebrations?
I think there'll be many highlights, but the moment that I expect to be most powerful will be at the end of Mass on the 650th anniversary itself of the signing of the foundation deed, when Cardinal Cormac, who was himself a student at the college in the 50s and then rector in the 70s, will intone the Te Deum Laudamus, and our thoughts will be united both with those students of the first century who used to intone the very same prayer of praise to God before the very same martyr's picture as we behold at the east end of our chapel. And also we'll be united to all those men and women who worshipped in the hospice church for two centuries prior to that. And so I think the sense of communion and thanksgiving to God for all the graces received on this site over six centuries and a half will be very palpable.
You were listening there to the rector of the Venerable English College here in Rome, Monsignor Nicholas Hudson. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.